The Arizona Cardinals might be heading to their bye week, but we have no such luxury. But what we do have is another brilliant winter breakdown as part of episode 129 of the British Birdland Breakdown. So as always, I'm Tom, he's Callum, and it's time to start this week's show.
And yeah, nice way to start a show, I think, as well, because the Cardinals now officially have a winning season for the first time since 2015 or thereabouts.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those seasons, you know, like, with all the expectations we had going into it, you know, anything above a winning record would be deemed a success for most people. And here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, we're definitely getting close to being able to, like, eclipse our predictions from the start of the season.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I did a 9-7 record, I think. So, you know, if we lose all six games, you know, I'm correct. And I wouldn't be mad though, really.
I really hope not. But, yeah, as you said, going into a bye week, and you know, that normally is the cue for a few team changes. And indeed, we have big news insofar as the Arizona Cardinals have signed a quarterback.
Yes, the news broke overnight that the Cardinals had signed Trace McSorley, a quarterback off of the Baltimore Ravens practice squad.
And indeed, when we tried to record this last time, we didn't know whether that was the end of Chris Streveler, and it looks like it really is. He's been released.
It came out like last night with the news, and also the Cardinals announced in the corresponding move, Chris Streveler was released, and we're not sure what will happen to him now. I mean, could he revert back to the practice squad? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how these roster moves work, because obviously then there's cap space and things like that to consider. But of all of the, you know, roster moves at the break, that's not one I hugely expected, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those as well, like, if we did keep Streveler around, would we really need four quarterbacks, or is that too many? Like,
oh,
would there
yeah,
be enough reps for people to get?
I agree that four is too many, but I guess more the thing I was thinking was, like, Chris, despite the fact he's been, you know, disappointing in the two occasions that we've seen him at the end of last year and briefly this season, he's not done, you know, a huge amount to lose his job. But I guess when you're third string, it's just like, oh, well, there's another opportunity to get somebody on, you know.
Looking at McSorley, he's only 6 foot tall and like under 190 odd pounds, I think. So he's another of the small stature quarterbacks. Because, you know, it's not like we're lacking those, are we?
Well, I mean, at least we know they fit in our system, which is good. But, I mean, despite the fact that Trace did really relatively well at college, he's just not been a great fit in the NFL so far.
Well, I mean, he's not really had the opportunities being in Baltimore.
That's true.
Because he's been behind a guy called Lamar Jackson. We might have heard of him.
He did cover for Lamar Jackson during that famous break, didn't he?
He did, yes, when Lamar was either getting an IV drip or he needed to go to the toilet. That was Trace McSorley, who was leading the Baltimore Ravens down the field on those drives.
So, yeah, strange one. I guess it's like something that we hadn't hugely considered going into the break. But I guess when there's a good deal on the horizon like that, you know, you kind of take those risks, right?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things as well. The Cardinals, the previous week, they did try to sign a quarterback off the Kansas City Chiefs. Practice squad, so it's not like they weren't looking for a better backup to the backup.
And I guess as well, like, if you know that you've got Kyler Murray like being sat for multiple weeks at this point, and you've got, you know, I guess like a higher chance of Colt McCoy not being ready or being injured or something like that, then, you know, all of a sudden your third string quarterback becomes a bit more of an important thing.
Yeah, but we do have the bye to look forward to. So hopefully after that, we have got the guy like Kyler Murray back.
Yeah,
we've got
DeAndre
Hopkins back.
Then the real question is whether, like half of Twitter seems to think, whether Larry Fitzgerald will then be, you know, re-signed for a Super Bowl push. But personally, I doubt that.
Yeah, I mean, can we just leave that in the past, please? It's all we're asking for. This is
yeah.
Wins without Larry Fitzgerald, why would we need him?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just one of those things. People get romantic about it and they think, oh, well, you know, if the Cardinals are finally going to head to the Super Bowl, it'd be good to get him a ring and all of this sort of stuff. But frankly, I think why fix what ain't broke?
Exactly, and it seems like we haven't got any more news and we don't have any games to talk about next week. We should get the boring stuff out of the way before we talk about win number 9 of the season.
Yeah, let's get our admin out of the way, shall we?
Yep, so we'll kick off with some fantasy football news.
How'd you get on this week?
Well, I mean, we won for the third straight game this week in the Birdgang Bowl because of massive points coming from Austin Eckler and Jonathan Taylor. Nice. I mean, we're still 3-8 and ninth in the league, so it's way too late for a playoff push now. So I wish they would have turned up a bit sooner this season.
Yeah, if the Bolts had been a bit more reliable, I think I'd be doing well as well, because I got 60 points from having Austin Eckler and Keenan Allen both on the field this week, and ended up beating my opponent 165 to 150. But I'm still down in ninth in the league, and it doesn't look like it's going to improve much because my rest of my schedule's against some pretty tough opponents.
Yeah, it's a weird one with the Birdgang Bowl because we're both doing really badly in it, and you know, neither of us are going to win that glorious bowl at the end of the season.
I know. I feel like the minute that we've put some sort of prize up on offer, that's it's not going to go to us.
It's fair to say as well that I wasn't so lucky in the Dynasty League because I also came up against the team with Jonathan Taylor. You know, he started to score like 50-odd points. I knew it was over. And it's not like I had enough points on the bench to make up for it either. So, you know, it's another loss. We move on. And my playoff hopes in that one are fading as well.
Meanwhile, my playoff hopes are definitely gone in that league because, I mean, yet another week with bye week issues. I've still got like a lot of good players injured. You know, I've got two quarterbacks who are not like last year. I leaned on Russell Wilson a lot, and I got to tell you that neither him nor Joe Burrow are putting up great points. And yeah, so I lost again, but there's always next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, that one, because like last year you won the league. This year you might be getting the last place position.
I think possibly. That seems to happen in fantasy, especially with dynasty leagues, right? Because like so often with dynasty, I think you have these like two or three players in your squad that you built them around. And like last year, me having Derrick Henry and Russell Wilson was like, you know, a guaranteed 50 to 70 points every week. You know, now with neither of them scoring in the way that they used to, it's just, you know, it's hard to catch up. It shows the other flaws in my team, you know.
Dynasty, no one's really set up for like an ongoing dynasty in our league, it doesn't look like.
I think there was a few people who tried to draft for the future early on, but I think it's just a really tough thing to do.
Yeah, you either got to go all in or like look for the future, don't you? But, you know, you can't really do both of them. Because then you're just like in the middle of nowhere, like my team seems to be.
Yeah. I think I'll be looking for a dramatic reshuffle, and there'll be quite a few dropped players when it comes to the off season. But for now, let's see. I don't want to deliberately tank, but I think I'm going to be tanking regardless based on my squad.
Except for the time, and I think we still got to play in one of the last few weeks.
Oh yeah, I'm going to bring it that week. That's for sure.
Shocking. I could do with a win.
Oh well, I mean, what we could do is get on to the weekly pick'ems. So much like the prepared podcasters we are, we're going to do the weekly pick'ems as we go along. So Tom's picked Chicago over Detroit, which I think I would agree with. Although that's going to be a Thanksgiving game for everyone there, don't you think?
That's going to be an awful game, isn't
exactly.
it? Like you're looking at beat up Chicago team versus a Detroit team possibly starting a guy called Tim Boyle. Like, what the hell is this?
All I'm saying is that a 0-0 game has happened in the NFL, but not since the Super Bowl era. And we might be due one with this matchup. It doesn't look like fun. A game that does look like fun, though, is the Raiders against Dallas, where I think we'll both go with Dallas to take that one. And Buffalo over New Orleans. And I think Buffalo are still, despite their thrumping from the Titans a few weeks ago, I think they're still on the roll.
With those two games, it's a bit weird. Raiders started the season really well, didn't they? And then they've had all these controversies off the field. Like,
yeah.
They've had John Gruden's emails. They've had Damon Arnett waving a gun around. And then there's also the Henry Ruggs incident.
Yeah, Ruggs incident's nasty as well. But yeah, I think if you had said to somebody in like week four that this was going to be a Thanksgiving matchup, I think they'd be thinking it'd be like a real marquee one. But, you know, given the given how Dallas are playing, I think that's going to be a clear win from them.
Even though they are down a couple of players themselves, because I think Amari Cooper's out with COVID. CD yep. Lamb's possibly out with a concussion. So they're short on offense.
They've been spreading it around the field a lot this season as well, much like the Cardinals. So I think their depth will help them take care of that. And also, you know, if they can just get the ball moving on the ground, I think they'll be fine.
And also the final Thanksgiving game is Buffalo, New Orleans, and obviously Buffalo.
Yeah.
One of the best teams in the AFC. Why not go for them?
Yeah, I think so. Especially against the New Orleans team that's kind of been neither here nor there all season.
I mean, they're another one who've been hit by injuries, haven't they? Because they lost Jameis Winston. I think.
Yeah, they did.
Alvin Kamara's been out for a couple of weeks. And, you know, it's still up in the air whether he plays this one.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that if you're New Orleans, this is not a game that you would want to be starting somebody who's, like, questionable. You know, because it's like, it's not a game that it looks like you would win anyway.
Yeah, Sunday, we've got a good slate of games for Sunday, though.
Yeah, that's true. We've got Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. And I think, so you've gone with Cincinnati here, which I think I would maybe disagree with, because Pittsburgh, while they've been up and down a bit, Cincinnati have just really struggled offensively.
I mean, they started the season off pretty well, didn't they? They were top of the division, you know.
Yeah.
And then they've like lost, I think they lost three of the last four, and then they've fallen. They were, at one point, they went from top of the division to bottom of the division, but I think they're like third now, so.
I mean, I've not watched a full since the game this season, but definitely feels like from red zone highlights, etc., to me that Joe Burrow looks like he's lost his confidence a little bit.
I mean, it's a weird one with them as well, because they've got the weapons, like they've got Joe Mixon in the backfield, they've got Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, yeah. You know, so they should be putting up points, but they've been struggling recently, and I'm not sure why.
I think they're another team that has penalty issues. Then after that, we've got Tampa Bay and Indianapolis, where Tom, you've gone for Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think I'm just really thinking about the NFC playoff seedings at this point, because I mean, like, Indianapolis have been playing really well. Jonathan Taylor, especially.
That was unbelievable. Like, what was it, 5 touchdowns or something last weekend?
Yeah, he's been ridiculous. Like, I saw a chart, like, showing runs and touchdowns from players over the past 8 weeks. Like, there's a small group all bunched together. And then there's, like, Jonathan Taylor, like, massive out in front on both counts.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I think I've seen that same graph. But, yeah, I mean, I could see Indianapolis putting up a fight, but Tampa Bay have just been so good. I do see them being able to control that game. Up next, we've got Carolina and Miami, where you're taking Cam Newton and his squad over the Dolphins, which I think is a pretty sensible move.
Miami's not really offering much this season, are they?
Not really.
After when everyone was saying last year, you know, this is going to be the year they'll challenge, and they've like done nothing. They either lost to the Jaguars.
Looking at Miami, a lot of the time I sort of look and go there, but for the grace of God, go the Cardinals. You know, it's like this team that had a couple good seasons, you know, 6-7 years ago, whatever it would have been. They were never quite in playoff contention the same way that the Cardinals were. And then they've just been like, you know, scrolling through quarterbacks and just never been able to get a coherent system together.
And yeah, think, well, I mean, you know, they've got
could so easily have been the Cardinals, like, post-2015 when Palmer retired.
Yeah, I mean, like, they've had Tua, haven't they? But then there's also been all the rumblings about them wanting to get Deshaun Watson from Houston. So it's like, even then, they're not set on a quarterback.
Which can't feel good if you're Tua, right? Like, who's the closest thing they've had to a franchise QB in a few years anyway, since Tannehill.
And speaking of Tannehill, he's next up because we've got Tennessee and New England.
Yeah, I think New England is a fair choice here. The Titans are one of those teams that they, for some reason, have been winning against good teams and losing against bad teams.
What do you say about the week one game, though?
Well, this is across the last 5 or 6 weeks or something like that. But yeah, the week one game being a bit of an odd anomaly for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm agreeing with New England on this one because, you know, the way they've been playing recently and the injuries Tennessee have been suffering, it's like, you know, I just think New England might be able to pull it out just about.
I think so. And I think New England is starting to feel put together in a way that they haven't done for a few years now. So I think taking them is sensible.
Plus it's Belichick and coach against.
Yeah, I know.
Understudy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to choose in that regard. And additionally, it's a home game for New England as well. So next up, we've got Philadelphia at the New York Giants. And I'm going to continue to just not pick New York teams here.
Well, I mean, they have just sacked their offensive coordinator, so that bodes well for them going into this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, New York Giants pretty much, again, in full rebuild mode. And Philly's doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, they've been finding their feet the past few weeks, haven't they, with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. You know, just seems to be scoring a lot of points, and I can't see New York Giants keeping up with that.
Yeah,
not with Daniel Jones at quarterback turning the ball over.
Yeah, that's the hard bit, isn't it? Is overcoming like a differential of 3+ turnovers per game. Atlanta and Jacksonville, and you've gone with the Jaguars.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like Atlanta is just a weird team because, again, everyone thought, you know, coming into the season, they might look pretty good with the weapons they had on offense. But then we've had Calvin Ridley out with his mental health issues. We've had Cordarrelle Patterson. I think he's out injured with an ankle injury. He obviously traded Julio Jones away, so he hasn't had much, has he?
No, I mean, I follow a few Atlanta fans on social media, and it seems pretty painful to be an Atlanta fan right now. So I think losing to Urban Meyer's Jaguars would probably just be like the icing on the cake for them.
I mean, another game that's really not going to look like it's going to be anything special is the New York Jets against the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I can't say I'm looking forward to this one either. Texans, what can you say? I think I'm going to take the Jets with you here as well.
Well, I mean, it's just really who's the worst of the two, really. And I think Houston's just about shading that. Hence where I go with the Jets.
The question is, which of the two games between this and Chicago-Detroit is going to be the worst?
I wonder what the record is for like having the lowest points scored in two games in 1 week. Probably happened in like the 20s, didn't it? You know, when they were playing on like solid mud fields.
Yeah,
like they
probably.
Scored nothing.
In the winter as well. Chargers and Denver. I think I'm going to take the Chargers here. They're just unstoppable point scoring machines right now.
Yeah, I can't see Denver being able to keep up, not with their offensive situation. So, yeah, Chargers for me as well.
Getting towards the NFC West teams, we've got the Rams playing Green Bay, which is actually a pretty big matchup in terms of NFC seeding.
Yeah, it's a massive one because I think if Green Bay win, then they would reclaim the number one seed.
Yeah.
However, if LA wins, then, you know, it tightens up the race behind us for the second seed. So
yeah, exactly.
That's why I've gone with the Rams, just because they're not the Packers.
I think this is one of those games where it's like there's both good and bad things that happen either way. Where it's like, you know, if Green Bay wins, they get the one seed, but the Rams close up behind us in the division. Whereas if but the Rams lose out behind us in the division if Green Bay win. But if the Rams win, you know, obviously Green Bay don't get the one seed, but it puts us closer to like a small bad run, putting us into second place in the division.
I think ideally, could they both tie? Let's go for that.
They technically could. We have Minnesota playing San Francisco, two teams in a little bit of an odd situation.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Minnesota, they were labelled this past week on the NFL show as the best team in the NFC, according to OC Umenyora.
That seems wrong, but
I mean,
yeah,
especially when they're 5-5, you know, come on.
Yeah, yeah, I think I would take Minnesota here. I mean, San Francisco's pulled off a few good performances against big teams so far this year, but Minnesota's 5-5 and San Francisco has a, you know, distinctly losing records. So
yeah, I'm just going to go for Minnesota just because, you know, they're not the Rams, not the Niners, whatever.
Fair enough. Cleveland, Baltimore.
I mean, like, heading into the season, this one would have looked like a really good game, but then Cleveland really hasn't delivered what everyone expected them to.
Nah, they've not. They've been battling injuries. They've been battling, you know, players leaving and all sorts of stuff like that. So, I suspect that it's going to be a much more one-sided affair here, and Baltimore is clearly going to take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the Ravens manage to cope with losing Trace McSorley, but I think they've got enough in the bag to beat the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And finally, we have in Sunday Night Football, Seattle versus the Washington football team.
I think that's Monday Night Football, actually.
Monday Night Football, excuse me. Yeah. Which for me, I think this is a clear Washington victory.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way the Seahawks are playing at the moment, You look at it, their offensive line struggles as well, going up against the Washington defensive line. You know, Russell Wilson's going to be running around a lot, I think.
You know, I think if Russell Wilson was a few years younger, they'd have him sat. You know, they'd be forcing him to sit this one out, but he's out there making a mess, as it were. So, yeah, there you go. I don't rate this year's Seattle team at all.
And now we can get to slam them a bit more because we've got a game recap to talk about.
Yeah, I'm glad we saved this for last. It's nice. I mean, the final score of 23-13 to the Cardinals is definitely not indicative of, number one, the score that could have been, and number two, just how dominant the Cardinals were in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals go and now guarantee the winning season and a winning division record. Colt McCoy goes 3-0 against the Seahawks in his career, and Pete Carroll is losing the plot and on the hot seat. What more can you ask for from this game?
And on top of that, Chandler Jones becomes one of the all-time sack leaders at Lumen Field.
Despite the fact he's never been a Seahawks player, which is just ridiculous, isn't it?
It's mad, isn't it? It's so good. Yeah, I mean, that being said, as much as it was a game where we came out with a win, a game where, you know, we dominated both, you know, time of possession and just general feel of the game, there are a few little negatives and little niggles to get out of the way.
I mean, I've only got the one down on the document, so yeah, I suppose we should kick off with that. And kickoff is apt because it is a kicker.
Yeah, very appropriately. And it's one of the first times, I think it's the first time we've had anything bad to say about Matt Prater.
Yeah, I mean, some of the errors you could probably be accredited to the new long snapper who couldn't figure out laces in or laces out.
Yeah, indeed. And it's obviously, you know, that kind of thing can put off timing big time. But equally, you know, there was a few field goals, which I think it was two field goals and an extra point that were missed, right?
It was, yes. But, I mean, fortunately, that didn't cost us the game. Fortunately, it didn't cost us much besides the chance of putting up 30-plus points yet again on the team. But
yeah, I think for me, it's a shame that we didn't, you know, ice the game earlier. Because I was talking to a bunch of Cardinals fans like during the game, you know, on Twitter and WhatsApp and stuff like that. And we were sort of all saying like, this game should have been, you know, an insurmountable lead by like the middle of the third quarter. And instead we kind of had to wait, you know, basically an extra quarter on top of that to get a like game sealing touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cardiac Cardinals though, isn't it? Like, they're always around somewhere in some form.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way, I don't think there was a huge risk of us being you know, of us being totally taken over, but you know, there were certain points when it was like a one score game, when it really shouldn't have been. It just didn't feel like it should have been a one score game at all. But yeah, as I said, you know, ultimately we got the lead and we kept the lead.
Yeah, and I mean, like, obviously, ultimately getting the win is more important than any like individual performance that
hugely
may have cost us a few points.
And on top of that, let's not forget as well that, you know, this is still putting up 23 points with a backup quarterback.
A backup quarterback who's gone 2-1 in the past 2 weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Granted, the two wins have come against two really shocking defenses, but couldn't beat what's in front of you.
They're also two divisional wins, so there you go. Do you know what? We're already talking positives. Should we just get on to the actual positive section?
And I suppose we should kick off the positive section with Colt McCoy, because, you know, who else would we do that with?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, his second week up against Carolina was not the best performance, and I think a lot of people were worried going into the game, but he came in, he put up excellent numbers, he produced some great drives down the field, and ultimately, you know, got us the points that we needed.
It was just a really solid outing from Colt McCoy, wasn't it, in general? Like, he had a really high completion percentage, which was probably brought down a little bit due to, like, three or four dropped passes, which should have been caught.
Well, I think he would have had a 100% completion record if those drops hadn't happened. Like, there was some stat like that. I mean, his quarterback rating was like 120 something.
I don't think he would have had 100% completion percentage, because he did throw a couple of balls away as well. But
oh no, I should have said that was at a certain point in the game. I think that was like just after halftime. he would have been sitting at 100% if it wasn't for a few drops.
Yeah, I mean, he has found himself again amongst the franchise's top 10 completion percentages of all time in a single game. So,
which is pretty wild, right?
Yeah, it's just one of those things, isn't it? Like, he just played steady football, especially on those two really long scoring drives that we put together in the first half.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's exactly what we needed at the time, right? It was like, okay, this defense is pretty woeful. We could chuck the ball up a couple times and have a go at like scoring on them, but actually the more effective thing for winning that game is just to keep the ball out of the hands of the Seattle offense, which is the only, you know, bright spark that they have on that team.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically the plan, it seemed like, because we had those two drives that I think they were like 15 plus plays, took like 9 minutes off the clock.
Yeah,
ended
exactly.
With touchdowns. What more can you ask for, really?
I mean, the majority of the first half was two Cardinals drives, like most of the first half, which is pretty good. It's like exactly what you want to be happening at that time.
Yeah, especially for us British fans, you know, when it gets late at night, you're like yeah. Thinking, let's make it full time as soon as possible, boys, then we can go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. And in this was definitely the case with that, at least in the first half. But yeah, overall, you got to say, you know, Colt McCoy really, really ran away with it. He stepped up and got exactly what he needed done. And yeah, that's just it's a really good thing. And again, he walks away with an award from us as well.
Yep. With you saying he ran away with things, he also ran away with the voting for the British Beer Gang Breakdown Player of the Game Award, where he took over 60% of the votes. And yes, we did have a lot more than the 200 votes this week. You know,
yeah. I mean, I guess especially with it being like a majority British people as well, there's a lot of people who would just, you know, go to bed immediately after a loss versus, you know, with a win, it's like, I'm gonna sit up and scroll social media for a little bit. But a well-deserved win, I think. And you know, just again, really, really stepping up to the plate. Colt McCoy is one of those signings that we discussed in the off season, and I think we were sort of saying like, well, you know, it's a backup QB, I hope we never have to see him, but we're at least sort of saying like, you know, this is a veteran guy. This is somebody who really knows what they're doing, and they're going to be doing a better job than Chris Stravler. And here we are, 3 games, 2-1. That's pretty good in my book.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, even without Kyler Murray, we seem to have solidified our position at the top of the NFC. So,
yeah, definitely.
People were maybe thinking, you know, we're going to fall behind a bit without Kyler, but, you know, did the complete opposite, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as impressive as Colt was, the rest of the offense kind of really stood up for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was a lot to do with Colt McCoy's performance in the game, but a lot of it should go to the other offensive players of the team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you could probably mention pretty much every offensive starter here as somebody who made a contribution at some point during the game. You know, there was a couple of guys who really kind of stood out.
Yeah, I mean, like quite a lot of the offensive players we are going to mention did have a really good game. Like, they didn't all completely stand out from each one another.
No. Anyway, yeah, so I mean, talking about sort of individual players, I guess, you know, like in the absence of DeAndre Hopkins, we still really haven't settled on a replacement QB1, but AJ Green kind of had his best game since return from COVID. 4 catches for 78 yards and some pretty impressive catches as well.
Yeah, I mean, he stood up quite a few times, didn't he? During the game, making big catches. I think he had a couple that were over 20-odd yards apiece.
I think the two that were over 20 yards as well came on third down, which is always a nice thing.
Yeah, and then he had also the defensive pass interference penalty that he drew, which took us down the field pretty quickly on one drive.
Yeah, definitely. But no, I mean, it's nice to see. And obviously, you know, just a really talented player. And he was out for COVID in the San Francisco game and obviously held to be quite anonymous in the Panthers game. So it's nice to kind of see him almost kind of come back from all that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, another guy who really stood out in this one was the guy who seems to be the replacement for DeAndre Hopkins, and that's Antoine Wesley.
Yeah, indeed. Wesley has had a couple of little moments here and there this season, but four big catches for 44 yards and just, yeah, producing some really nice route running. And as I said, yeah, just good momentum keeping catches.
I mean, you're never going to mistake him for DeAndre Hopkins, are
no,
you? But,
no, you're know, not.
He's definitely a really tall guy that you can tell, you know, he's going to be winning those one-on-one catches if he has to go up for them.
Yeah, exactly, which is perfect for going down the sideline or something like that, because it's also an excellent way to draw DPI.
Yeah, I think he didn't draw one, did he?
No, he didn't.
But he did make some nice catches down the field to pick up first downs, so...
Yeah.
You can see why they wanted to keep him on the 53-man roster.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, when you've got somebody with like that kind of pure physicality, there's a lot you can teach to that, you know. But yeah, a good game, and obviously helped by some pretty poor cornering from Seattle. But still, you know, you can only play the defense you're in front of, and a good game from him.
I think the receiver who stands out most is probably Zach Ertz, though, even though he's technically a tight end.
Yeah, absolutely. Eight catches for 88 yards and two touchdowns. Yeah, just an excellent, excellent game from him. And he looked like he was enjoying it quite a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, he came so close to being the first 100-yard receiving tight end for the Cardinals since who knows when. And I think he would have done had he not dropped a pass or two.
I remember him dropping one pass. I don't remember about dropping two, but yeah, I mean, you still can't sniff at that, right?
No, I mean, like, obviously we brought him in for a reason, and that yeah. reason was to be like a threat at the tight end position, and he definitely showed to be that during this game.
Yeah,
he was
agreed.
When he drew a defensive pass interference penalty as well.
He did, yeah, because how else are you going to cover Zach Ertz, you know?
Especially when you're Jamal Adams. You're not going to be able to cover him, are you?
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's also the moment after his first touchdown where he spiked the ball and scared the Seahawks.
I was so convinced that we were going to get called a penalty on that. I thought it was going to be like taunting or unsportsmanlike conduct or something like that. But there you go. You know, apparently it was just milk toast enough for the referees.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're allowed to spike the ball, aren't you? Because guys like Rob Gronkowski do it all the time.
You're allowed to spike the ball, but I think it was more the like shouting at the fans that I thought he was going to get done for.
I mean, I'm sure the fans shout stuff back at them, you know, if they can't handle it.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, there you go, Zach Ertz. And obviously, you know, two good touchdowns from him, including one that kind of just ran into the end zone with after like a little shovel pass, which I thought was a beautiful play.
Yeah, I think we've seen that play so many times, haven't we? I'm sure it was the one that was run when like Larry Fitzgerald had that one against
Green Bay. Yeah, it was. Or it was a similar sort of thing where it was just like faking the run and then there was like a nice little open lane, you know. But yeah, good game all around from him. And speaking of kind of faking the run, in the sort of role of Chase Edmonds, Rondale Moore with 11 catches.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a really quiet 11-catch game from a player, though, wasn't it? Because he only managed 51 yards from those.
It's true, but also, if you look at his route map, every single catch that he had was behind the line of scrimmage. So, like, you know, he was starting the catch with minus 4 yards and then, you know, had to overcome that. And I think he did a really good job at that. And it was really plays that were designed for short yardage, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely picked up quite a few first downs with the moving the chains, that sort of play.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the kind of play he was in there for, which is why it's kind of unsurprising that it was only 51 yards. But yeah, Rondale Moore really turning into, you know, a very good, useful player for us. And safe pair of hands as well.
Yeah, coming into the game as well, Cliff was mentioning how he wants to get Rondale more involved, so I mean, getting 11 catches thrown his way, that's pretty evolved, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so. And definitely, like, plugging a little gap that we've had since Thingy got injured, since Chase Edmonds was out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like James Conner's a terrible receiver, but he's definitely not on the same level as Chase Edmonds, is he?
Also, I mean, James Conner's clearly doing just fine at his current position because he did get 99 yards off of 26 touches.
Yeah, and he had won the one touchdown as well late in the game to ice it.
Yeah, which was a damn good touchdown to have, and also kept him in the sole possession, I think, of the most touchdowns in the NFL.
I think he was. Well, he's now up to 13, but I think Jonathan Taylor's now ahead of him.
Oh, that's true, yeah. That is true.
I suppose scoring 5 touchdowns does do that for you, though.
Yeah, 5 touchdowns in a game is pretty solid. But yeah, I do think, you know, the James Conner train is most effective when Chase Edmonds is around as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Chase is a good enough running back on his own, but, you know, with the two together, that's a pretty good combination to have. Like,
yeah, for sure.
You're definitely missing having Chase Edmonds around, even if the results are more James Conner touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, on top of those guys, obviously, you know, the offense did really well. I think the offensive line did a really good job against, you know, a fairly beaten up Seattle D-line, but, you know, they kept Bobby Wagner to himself a bunch and kept Colt upright, which is, you know, good because he was having to take some time to get some plays together, including a few scrambles here and there.
I swear Bobby Wagner's been around for like centuries. It just seems like every single time he played.
Yeah, he's an old workhorse for them, but he still does well, to be fair. But no, I think our offensive line did a really good job against them. And yeah, the offense as a whole, just clicking and doing exactly what they needed to do, which was nice long drives, keep it going, keep it chill.
We can't mention the offense for all this time without mentioning the defense as well, because they were just as impressive in this 23-13 victory.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about the game plan for the offense being to stay on the field. The game plan for the defense is obviously just get the ball out of the hands of Russell Wilson as soon as possible. Yeah, they did exactly that.
Yeah, and for the 8th time this season, the Cardinals were able to hold the team to below 20 points, which is the most in the NFL, quite unsurprisingly.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get to be the only team with 2 losses in the NFL by letting teams score on you, but yeah, once again, excellent performance from them. And also, you know, we were talking about, you know, the game not being iced for a long time. You know, I think the defense, if they had played poorly, could have lost us this game because we were only, you know, a score behind at certain points.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one that was closer than it should have been because obviously the offense was a bit limited without guys like Kyler and DeAndre Hopkins, but he did enough to get the win.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent numbers overall for the defense. And once again, you know, it's much harder to quantify their performances. But, you know, as I mentioned at the top, Chandler Jones becoming one of the all-time sack leaders in Lumen Field has to be right up there.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the guy that stands out most, you know. I think he had two sacks in this one. There was a debate, possibly 2.5 sacks, but I think...
Yeah, I think the official was... No, I think the official was 2.5. At least at the end of the game. Maybe it got reviewed or something. But, you know, I saw Chandler Jones on Twitter after the game basically saying that after his really good game in Seattle a few years ago, he took those cleats and put them in the cupboards and never looked at them again until this game when he went out and took the exact same cleats out and wore them on the field. You know, same laces, same everything.
Yeah, I saw that tweet as well. You know, it's just one of those things with Chandler Jones, isn't it? Like, he's now on, I think it's 105 career sacks, which
is pretty
ridiculous.
Good. But yeah, just having a great time out there. And you got to say, like, the whole defensive line was doing a good job, but obviously Chandler Jones is the guy that really stuck out there.
Yeah, I mean, like, you would think with the Seattle team, they're usually a pretty good run-first team, aren't they? And, like, besides a few decent runs, did they really do too much damage on the ground, did they?
No, I agree. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously, and on top of that, given that that was a hallmark of our defense's weaknesses in the first, you know, third of the season, that was like our big thing I don't know whether they've either done a lot to combat that, or whether they've, you know, whether it's just like there's just been a general improvement, but clearly something was working for them there.
And it wasn't just Chandler Jones who was able to sack Russell Wilson, because he had Marcus Golden and Isaiah Simmons getting to the quarterback.
I think as well, the Isaiah Simmons one was like very telegraphed before, because he was starting to run on the fake counts a little bit. And so they kind of knew it was coming, and yet he still got there just because, you know, he's got the pure physicality to do so. And
I think
also,
he got through one touch, didn't he, though? Around the edge, nobody touched him at all.
Yeah, he just managed to sprint round, basically. You know, that kind of explosiveness is hard to defend from in terms of being an offensive lineman. And Seattle's offensive line weren't looking great overall.
And of course, Golden, you know, once again, just doing what he does, relentlessly pursuing the quarterbacks, getting there. You know,
yep.
What more could you ask for from him, really?
Yeah, exactly. You know, a huge amount of heart kind of getting thrown into that game. And you got to say, like, overall, it just looked and felt like a different team, and especially a different defense from last week.
I still feel like we should be paying him a lot more than we are, though. It's just
ridiculous. It's quite shocking, isn't it? I guess we'll see when it comes to contract negotiation times again.
Yeah, but I mean, he is still tied down until over next year as well. So
yeah,
at least we've got another year of him under this contract.
And meanwhile, the defense as a whole managed to kind of keep, I guess, we talked about the run there, but the passing game was fairly anonymous as well, with DK Metcalf held to very little compared to what he's usually able to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think he was probably on, he had Byron Murphy covering for most of the game, but like,
yeah,
he had a couple of catches here and there, but never anything that threatened any.
And I think a lot of the catches that he had were the kind of catches that are designed to make it a safe catch, but also won't get you any yards beyond that, you know? The kind of ones where you have to, like, stop in your route and turn around and be, like, right on the sideline to try and force a cornerback to come over the top of you rather than be underneath. But, yeah, I think overall, just a brilliant defensive performance.
Yeah, I think Tyler Lockett got through a couple of times, you know, on a couple of big plays, but apart from that, Russell Wilson and the offense really didn't offer much, did they?
Yeah, and had a pretty unmemorable touchdown and stopped for field goals a few times, and also just, I think we kept forcing them to punt it a lot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they have got a good punt, though. That's
I will say that for sure. We ended up getting stuck in some pretty horrible field positions based on how good their punter was.
Feel dirty praising a Seahawk, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we accidentally praise any more, you know, obviously we'll celebrate a win again, but should we just have a quick chat, given that we don't have a game to preview, about what's left for the season?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at the schedule, like, after the game, and it's like we've got 6 games left. 3 of those start at 6 p.m, which we always hate. Because
yep.
Red zone gets taken away from us.
Exactly.
We've got the 2 1:15 a.m. starts, which is the Rams on Monday Night Football and the Colts on Christmas Day / Boxing Day.
And I actually of all the games to set up for and set for the 1:15 starts, I actually kind of like doing that on Christmas Day, because it's like that's the quiet time, you know. Like, it's been such a busy day before that point, and then I just get to, like, sit for a few hours in the early morning in the dark and just be like, ah, it's my time to be myself, by myself.
And plus it's Boxing Day the day after, isn't it? So it's like, exactly. Don't really do anything, like, on those days anyway.
Yeah, don't need to, there's nothing to get up for or whatever.
So yeah, it has been a nice schedule for us. And then, of course, we've got the 1:25 p.m. game left.
Yeah, which is frankly becoming my favorite slot. I just, you know, I really like the fact that it's like I get my red zone, I get to watch the start of the other games, maybe on red zone, maybe not, and then 9:25 the football kicks off and I get my little game.
Well, the 2-1, well, the 2:06 p.m. kickoffs, which are up for us.
Yeah.
We've got the Chicago Bears, and I think it's Detroit Lions, and then also the Dallas Cowboys.
Bit of a mixed bag there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Dallas one gets flexed, like, oh, yeah, Sunday Night Football or something like that.
For sure. That has to be flexed to prime time.
Even though that would mean, like, 3 of our 4 games in that sort of time span would be on prime time.
I guess it also depends on who else is playing, like, who's already scheduled for prime time that week.
True.
Because, you know, if it's, like, I'm trying to think of a good marquee matchup, the Bills versus I don't know, Rams or something like that, then it'd be hard to flex them out of it. But if it's like, I don't know, the Patriots versus the Kansas City or something, then maybe they would be looking at getting rid of us, or getting rid of them rather, putting us in.
We're going to actually have a look now to see what the games are that week. 2nd of January. God, it'll be New Year as well. Time flies.
Hopefully we've got more games after that as well.
I mean, you'd certainly hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, the way we're playing at the moment, you would hope so.
I mean, technically, we are on the way to the playoffs anyway, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that week, the Sunday Night Football game is the Packers against the Vikings.
I mean, that's a historic game, I guess, but I could see us being... I could see them being flexed for putting us in there.
I mean, worst comes to the worst, it will be the Sky Sports 6 o'clock game.
Yeah, exactly.
Considering, like, the other games you've got on at that sort of time span, but, you know.
I think there might be a bunch of Sky Sports in our future, frankly. But, yeah, I mean, where do you sort of see us coming out after all that? Because, like, the next 3 games we've got, we're at the Bears, hosting the Rams, and then at the Lions. To me, that's easy 2-1. If not, 3-0.
I mean, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? Like 2-1. That's definitely the minimum. But it's like, with this team, should you really look too far ahead? Because you never know who's going to be available or not.
Yeah, that is very true. I guess the best that we can hope for is that, you know, what would be almost ideal would be like, if we're playing well enough against the Bears to give Kyler even another half a game's rest. You know, if we're up enough at the break that we can send out Colt.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely an option, isn't it? Especially with how we've seen him play.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not
It's not like the Bears are up to much this season. At the moment, they are in a 5-game losing streak.
Yeah, and you would hope as well, I guess, that that Kyler would, you know, be well enough to just want to play the whole time and just get the reps in. But I can't imagine the Bears giving us too much of an issue. But I guess we'll be back next week to preview that game.
Well, yeah, exactly, because the only thing we want to do is go 1-0 each week as we head to the final week of the season.
Exactly, yeah. As we've sort of said all season, the only thing that 9 wins so far guarantees us is that we will finish 9-8 or better.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, but I think this team can win a lot more than that. So
yeah,
we'll see sort of second half of the season, even though it's like not really half of the season.
It's like the last third of the season, I suppose. I guess that's us from this week, and we'll find some content for next week. You never know, there's maybe going to be some news. Maybe that Larry Fitzgerald signing will finally happen.
I certainly hope not. But, you know.
Yeah, same here. But yeah, there we go.
Yeah, so as always, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang. If you're on Facebook, like us at facebook.com/BritishBeardGang and join the group at facebook.com/groups/BritishBeardGang. Buy British Beard Gang merch at britishbeardgang.tmail.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave us a review, share it around, you know, let everyone know how great of an Arizona Cardinals podcast this is, even though I sound like deaf this week. Here's what it is.
Tom does have a nasty cold. And this is also our fifth attempt at recording this. So, yeah.
We will only ever see the first, well, the only copy of it, really, won't we?
Yeah, exactly.
These mishaps.
Anyway, But yeah, thanks for listening, and thanks from me, and we'll see you next week.
Yep, thanks for listening, and goodbye.